Be on Business, Transportation, and Workforce Development to order. It's 1 o'clock. We'll get going. Colleagues, I'd like to start with possible introduction of committee bills. Janet has one before us. Just want to just give us the real brief what it does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. LC 1281 extends the period for acceptance or denial of workers' compensation claims from 60 to 90 days at the request of the Self-Insurers Association.
And again, this is introducing the bill to the process. We, in fact, will not get this bill. It'll go to another committee. Agreeing to introduce it does not suggest support or opposition to the bill. And with that, I'd like to entertain a motion for a work session on this.
So moved.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved LC 1281 be introduced as a committee bill. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay. Now we're going to move right into our agenda, open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 95. And Janet, explain and see who we have with us to talk to us about this today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 95 is a bill at the request of the Construction Contractors Board, and it would establish a maximum $150 fee for issuance of a two-year home inspector certification, and it also changes the term for renewal of that certification from 1 to 2 years. Home inspectors are required to be certified and to pass a competency test. They now pay $50 for an application fee and $50 for a testing fee, but no initial certification fee in addition to that. Each year they're required to pay $75 renewal fee. Senate Bill 95 does institute an initial certification fee that would be in addition to the application and testing fee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we have for us to testify. Come forward.
Senator Metzger and members of the committee, my name is Craig Smith. I'm with the Construction Contractors Board. I'm joined today by Gina Fox, who's with the Construction Contractors Board Education Section. The bill before you today is, in essence, a housekeeping measure. We have been having a little program at the Contractors Board. It has to do with the Home Inspector Certification Program, and that's been going on for a number of years. About 2 years ago, we got to looking at the statute and became concerned because it did not appear that there was a statutory provision to charge the fee that we had been charging for the initial certification. We looked at changing that last session. That didn't work out too well. So at the conclusion of the session, when apparently we weren't going to be able to get that changed, we stopped charging that fee. So for the last year or so, we haven't been charging for it. We think it probably makes sense to charge for it. We know of no opposition to this. We're looking for a statutory solution to charging for this initial fee.
Okay. Are you here for public support? Or?
Gina's here in case you have any questions about the education bill, which is next, and also she works intimately with this program.
Okay. Well, I guess my first question would be is that who basically is footing the cost for the initial fee now since you dropped it?
Sure.
Where does the manpower, the cost, who's paying that? Somebody's paying for it.
Sure. Senator Metzger, it's a good question. I think that what I can tell you is that's being absorbed by other licensees. We have 44,000 licensed construction contractors. This is a program that involves about 500 total home inspectors, about 150 new applicants per year. So the cost to maintain the rules, do the enforcement, that sort of thing is being borne by the other licensed contractors today.
Okay. And then on your renewal, which is currently $75 a year, will stay that way, except that you're going to collect it every 2 years for $150. I assume that's a streamlining move of some kind.
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Other questions by the committee? Senator George, and then Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Chair. We talked about a little bit of this in my office, but I want to make sure I get on the record. Did you talk to the industry about this, and what was their reaction to it the best you can?
Chair Metzger and Senator George, throughout the last 2 years, we've talked to the industry about this problem. And in fact, they're the ones that have encouraged us to have this fee. They believe that they want their program to be self-supporting. I haven't talked to anybody this afternoon, haven't seen their lobbyists, haven't had a chance to talk to any home inspectors directly this afternoon or this morning.
Could you have any more?
Just one last.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. The other thing is that as I figure this out real quickly, roughly it's like $20,000 to $30,000 that this creates per year.
Yes.
Where will those funds go to? Because it doesn't seem like there's any additional. I mean, if we're paying for it with current budget, then why would we expand the fee if it's already being paid for by the current budget that we've already allocated?
Sure. Good question. And Chair Metzger, Senator George, this fee goes right into the general fund for the Construction Contractors Board. Heretofore, again, for about 10 years or so, that has been used to handle the staff at the Construction Contractors Board and the other things that we do. We stopped charging for it, and so we could consider a fee reduction or just not charge for this service. But I think the bottom line is that right now, they're being funded by other Construction Contractors Board activity licensees, and perhaps that's not fair.
I guess my question is, what will this money go to, since that's already being covered in the current budget?
Okay. And Chair Metzger, Senator George, this would not affect the spending limitation at all. It would, if anything, it would affect the balance that we have. It would allow us to reduce fees if indeed we collect more revenue than we spend or that is authorized by the Assembly.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Those were the exact questions that I had. I was just wondering where the money was going to go to, but you say you're going to reduce fees, and then I was very concerned about having the industry, their input and what they think of this.
Okay. That's a fair question. Again, Chair Metzger and Senator Mona Sanderson, I want to be careful about giving any promises to lower fees. The last time we did adjust fees, we adjusted them downward about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. That was the first time we'd been able to do that in about 15 years. So we're proud of that. Whether or not we could reduce fees again is difficult to say. Most contractors don't quibble about an extra $5 or $10 in terms of the licensing fee. They appreciate the fact that we lowered fees last time. Right now, again, what's happening is that all of these services that are provided to this particular program are being funded by general contractors, subcontractors, these types of folks. And again, I think this is a fairness issue as to whether or not you want them to fund their own program.
Thank you.
Yeah. Other questions? Senator Starr.
Thanks. Do you have any idea that whether the cost of the fee is actually what it costs? I mean, the fee amount is what it costs to run the program. How closely do you tie the fee to the actual cost?
Right. And Chair Metzger and Senator Starr, it's, again, a very good question. We haven't costed out what it costs to run this program. That fee was established at the inception of the program, $75 a year. Hasn't changed since it was established many years ago. I believe that we do keep records. I know that we keep records as to how much time staff puts into each one of our programs. I haven't costed this one out. If anything, it is costing more to run the program than we are collecting in fees. I don't have those figures in front of me.
Just follow up. Mm-hmm. Is there any consideration of separating the various programs under the CCB and having the fees direct toward the specific unit of business?
Chair Metzger and Senator Starr, this program is, the answer is no. There has been none, to my knowledge. The home inspectors appear to be very happy with the amount of service they're getting. Again, I think because they had such a small volume, between 400 and 500 total certified home inspectors, to try to micromanage or budget that kind of size program is rather difficult, but it certainly could be done.
Other questions? One final. So, Mr. Smith, you stopped collecting the initial fee how long ago?
Approximately 18 to 24 months ago.
Okay. Well, colleagues, my feeling on this is, and I agree with Mr. Smith, it's an issue of fairness. What we're doing is restoring what we had. Our renewal fee is staying the same, but I like the idea that people now only have to come every 2 years instead of every year go through. I know there's a cost of doing that, and appreciate the fact that you've kept that fee the same. I definitely don't think it's fair that other contractors are using their dollars because of a omission that another one gets by to take the work to do that. And so I would look at moving that forward. I think it is a matter of fairness that whether you're a roofer or a general contractor or anything else, shouldn't have to be paying for those fees just because a little quirk in the law puts you in that situation. So any other questions or thoughts?
Just one.
Yes.
It might be to your Janet, but no revenue impact? Looks like we're going to be adding a fee here, at least one that hasn't been paid for a couple of years. So,
Mr. Chair, the legislative fiscal office was down right before the meeting to say I don't know if the statement will be minimal, but it will be a minimal impact because of the number of new applicants they get is pretty limited. The number taking the test you thought was 150.
That's correct.
A year, and not all those people pass, so not all of them. Anyway, there will be a minimal fiscal impact.
But what about the revenue side?
Right. Their fiscal told us there would be a minimal revenue impact.
So minimal is what? Less than 50,000?
Under 50.
Right. Chair Metzger and Senator Starr, I need to do the math in my head. If you had about 100 new applicants a year, times 150, and they pay every 2 years, you can see we're talking there about $15,000.
Any questions? Okay. I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 95 and open a work session on Senate Bill 95. Senator Decker?
Oh, sure. I would be more than happy to. I haven't done this in a while. Move Senate Bill 95 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Decker has moved Senate Bill 95 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Further discussion? Would you please call the roll? You might as well get used to that.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Lon Sanderson?
Aye.
Senator Decker?
Both aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Chair Metzger?
Aye. I received a majority of the Senate Bill 95 has passed and moved to the floor, and I see I'm the one that hasn't yet been named to carry a bill, so I'll carry the fee bill. Okay. Let's move on now. Open up public hearing on Senate Bill 96, and I believe we have our same co-host here. Mm-hmm. And Janet, if you want to give us an overview first, and then we'll ask our visitors to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senate Bill 96 would allow the Construction Contractors Board to set the fee for home inspector competency testing by rule. You'll see on line 24 of the bill that $50 for testing is bracketed, so it'll be deleted, and the new sub 7 says the board may establish their competency testing fee by rule.
Okay, Mr. Smith.
Chair Metzger, member of the board, again, Craig Smith with the Construction Contractors Board, and Gina Fox. This is an interesting, I think, bill because it does have a policy issue attached to it. The issue is how much of a professional test do we have when it comes to such a small program? In days gone by, we had the home inspectors come before you and ask you to have the Construction Contractors Board provide them with certain regulatory services. Included with that was the application and licensing of those folks, but also a continuing education program and a testing program. We worked with the industry, predominantly home inspectors, to design a test, and that test has some 80 questions or so, and the test works fine. But we worry from time to time, because we do get some complaints from home inspectors who don't pass the test, that the test isn't as good as it ought to be. What you've authorized thus far is the ability of the board to charge a $50 fee, which when we were just administering the test ourselves and just designing the test and essentially using free labor to write the questions, that worked out pretty well. But we are, again, concerned that we need to bring this up a little bit, perhaps professionalize the test. There are some national tests. You might be familiar with real estate type tests that are out there. We'd like to go to that, we think, although I should tell you that not all of the industry is of one mind on this. There are some Oregon home inspectors that like the fact that Oregon has their own flavor or own testing. But $50 probably isn't sufficient to have even a good in-house quality test. We'd like the ability to set the test by rule, or at least the fee, and that's what this bill does. If we do it by fee, and if we can come to one mind as to whether or not to go to a professional test that's leveled at the national level, we probably would raise the fee to just under $200. Oklahoma has a test. They use the national test. It's at $195. We think that's reasonable, and we believe that's a pretty good test. So we ask for your support of House Bill 96 to allow us to set the fee for the home inspector test by rule.
Ms. Fox, do you want to testify on this one?
There are a number of things.
Identify yourself for the record first.
Gina Fox, the education manager at the Construction Contractors Board. There's a number of different pieces that are part of a quality test, and in order to make it valid and reliable. And we feel that it's really important for both the consumers and for home inspectors to have this test be as fair, reliable, and what they consider psychometrically quality test. And there are currently 16 states that use a national test, and the national test itself has been proven to be a fair and valid test. It goes through the psychometric evaluation to it. We have the ability to be able to take our current test and also have that assessment done to it, but that in turn can cost anywhere from $3,000 to $10,000 within itself. So we are looking that to administer a test and make sure that it is reliable and fair would cost some additional funding, and the current $50 cap does prohibit us from being able to do that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, let's start off with questions. Questions from the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ramona Sanderson.
You know, I don't know what a home inspector does. I know there's a lot of things that they need to do to make sure that everything is within code. But I'm uncomfortable not having a home inspector who actually does this come. I'd like to see what a test looks like. I would like to know the average cost of a test throughout the nation. Is Oklahoma the highest? Is 195 the highest in the nation? And is that why you chose it? I would like to know if there are any complaints from people who have had the home inspectors that we have now that aren't doing the job adequately. It's hard for me to want to, I mean, there's just, it's easy to say, yes, increase the fee, but it seems like I don't have enough information here.
Good point. Thank you. Other questions? Senator George.
Thank you, Chair. As we talked about before, I want to make sure my concern really comes down to two points. One is that we don't have home inspectors here for us to talk to about this particular program. And the second thing is allowing the agency to have to raise the fee by rule. Do you believe it's possible to sit down with some of the home inspector organizations? I know there's multiple, to sit down with them and try to come up with something that we actually have fixed so we understand what tests we're talking about and exactly what fee we would be talking about and have some buy-off from the industry. Is that a possibility before we get through this legislative session?
Chair Metzger and Senator George, I think that's absolutely doable.
Senator Scar.
Yeah, I'd rather just put a cap on the fee in the statute rather than allow the agency to set it by rule. I think that would raise my comfort level with this. And I also, it seems to me in other regulated industry out there that there are third-party testing that are, you know, I don't know all of them, but it seems to me that let the third party administer their own test and charge whatever they need to charge. And I don't know that it needs to go through the agency directly. It's something to look at as well in your conversations with the home inspectors.
Okay. Other questions? Well, I think you've got some clear direction. I think what would be very helpful is, number one, is with the home inspectors, keeping in mind that there is an affirmative responsibility on any home inspectors out there listening, if you have issues that, you know, to come before the committee, and we're going to give them that opportunity. I would also ask you to make outreach to those that you regulate on that same issue, addressing the issues that Senator Montes Anderson pointed out, in terms of giving us a little bit more background in terms of what other states do and what those costs are, what those tests look like. As Senator Starr mentioned, maybe there's other models too that might be permissive anyway within this language of others that might want to provide this service. And then what we will do is we'll wait about about 3 weeks. You know, we don't got all forever, but we got 3 weeks, plenty of time, I think, to do that, to make those calls, and certainly communicate with Janet so that we have maybe some heads up about what we're looking at for committee, so we can be expeditious about what that is. But with that, go forth and do good work, and we'll just close the public hearing on Senate Bill 96. Now we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 62 and turn it back over to Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 62 is at the request of the Landscape Contractors Board. It's a separate board. It's not within the Construction Contractors Board. And Senate Bill 62 does a number of things related to the bonding that licensed landscape contractor businesses have to have. The business gets the bond, not individual contractor licensees. Included behind the staff measure summary are some of the statutes that are related to the bonds, and it shows you the cost of the bond the amount of the bond that licensed landscape contractors have to have, and it depends on the amount of work they do and what type of work they do. The first Section 2 of the bill specifies the grounds for claims against the bond of a licensed landscaping business by various types of either subcontractors or property owners. The end of Section 2 allows the Landscape Contractors Board to set a lower limit on claims that are for materials or equipment from the bond. There are, in Section 9, toward the end of the bill, there are two limits that are put on the claiming from the bond for people that are not property owners. So these would be for suppliers and labor. They would only be able to obtain $3,000 of the bond. And as well, anyone trying to get dispute resolution costs, interest, or attorney's fees would only be able to get $3,000 from the bond. And finally, Mr. Chair, in Section 7, it allows the board to use mediation or other forms of dispute resolution, and it gives an explicit authority to use it's in the middle of Section 7, mediation or other forms of dispute resolution for either bonds or other types of disputes that come before them. And they've been able to use arbitration, but not these other forms of dispute resolution. That's what I have, Mr. Chair, and Mike Snyder is here.
Mr. Snyder, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us why we need this thing.
Chair Metzger and rest of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Snyder. I'm the current administrator for the Landscape Contractors Board. I'm also a licensed landscape contractor for the last 27 years. This bill... Last session, we increased the amount of the bond in a stepped manner. Depending on the amount of work that the business performed, they had to get different size bonds based on that amount of work, up to a $15,000 bond. What we failed to do at that time was to limit the amount that a supplier or non-owner could obtain as payment from that bond. So that left the consumer possibly with a zero amount if there was enough claims filed by suppliers, which was not the intent of the bond in the first place. Then the bond is to protect the consumer. If there's breach of contract or negligent work, the consumer is to have access to that bond to remedy that situation. The CCB, we came from the CCB. They administered our processes for many, many years, and that limit, we only had a $3,000 bond to begin with, and so when we increased the bond, we failed to limit the amount that could go to a non-owner claim. We feel like for consumer protection, that should be limited to a $3,000 amount so we don't become collection agencies for suppliers, and that allows the consumer then to have more money available to settle their differences between when they file claims with us and enter into our dispute resolution process. Since we came from the CCB, we also followed their dispute resolution processes, which was, you know, performing investigations, doing mediations and arbitration, which we had statutory authority to do the arbitration, but we realized that we didn't have clear statutory authority to perform mediation, which has been very successful for us, resolving these disputes between consumers, where they get to make a decision between the landscaping business and the owner is the only time that they get to decide how this is going to be resolved before it goes to binding arbitration. And so we've been very proud of our dispute resolution process and been very successful. About 95% of our claims are resolved through a mediation process. We just didn't have clear statutory authority to do that, and we would like to have that because it is successful. And the CCB has also done that successfully, and we model our program after theirs. We are also looking to expand where the bond can be used, because we've had situations where liens are filed against consumers, and the consumer has paid the contractor but hasn't paid a supplier, and therefore the supplier comes back out and the consumer has to pay twice to get the lien off their property. We feel the bond should be able to be used to discharge that lien, so that once they pay all their money, they don't have to pay twice, and we would like to do that also. I'm here to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. I remember this last year when we did do the bond, and so let me just give you in my own words,
sure,
what I think this does and what you have said, and you can tell me if that's accurate or not.
Okay.
Because our idea was to protect the consumer and make sure that they had access to some type of remedy had they fronted money and then not received the service. So if I employ a landscape contractor for $15,000 worth of landscaping, I pay my $15,000. Let's just say, to the extent of the argument, that nothing got done. I gave the guy $15,000, and he went and got a bunch of materials and never came to my landscaping. So I would then be able to go after that bond because I didn't get the contract for which I was awarded. But under the what you indicate as a failure in the bill that we passed last time, these guys who provided this, shall we say, less than honest contractor with all the materials to do my work and then used them somewhere else, that they could have access to those monies. I'm still out the $15,000 originally that I paid for the work, and that all the suppliers who were equally duped get paid before I get paid my original. I'm going to put the money up. I mean, is that?
It's real close.
Something like that. I mean,
Chair Metzger, it's very, very close. Two things. One, it's a landscaping business rather than the individual. I want to, you know, that's the difference in our two license system. The consumer always has first right to the bond in a 90-day period. Mm-hmm. So we have that already set up. So if claims come in through a 90-day period, and there's some supplier claims and also some consumer claims, the consumer has first right to the bond. But what happens is if you get somebody, say a supplier in a 90-day period, say the supplier files a claim right away and the consumer doesn't file the claim until 180 days down the road, and the supplier that supplied this business with $15,000 worth of material took all that money, mm-hmm. then the consumer wouldn't have access to anything, be zeroed out at that point. If we limit to $3,000, it would be $12,000 left to make that happen. So that's what we're looking for.
Okay.
But you're very, very close to that.
Yeah, I understand. Questions by the committee? Yes, Senator George.
I got two quick questions, mainly just clarifying things for myself. In your testimony, in the fourth line from the bottom, I'm trying to understand the contractual relationship here. It says, the fourth line from the bottom says, property on which the landscape work is performed and have a direct contractual relationship with the landscaping business. And yet when I read section 2, it looks like it's not only landscape work, but you can actually have a owner-agent, which wouldn't be a direct contractual relationship. And so I'm trying to understand your testimony here. If I hire somebody then who works with a landscaper, does this treat me different than if I contract with you directly?
No. Chair Metzger, Senator George. My understanding is the consumer has a relationship with somebody that he's given authority to arrange for that work to be done on that owner's property. That does not change how that you'll be treated.
In your testimony, the word kind of stuck out. Am I just misunderstanding that, or is it a double portion that you have the work performed and then there's also a direct contractual obligation for the consumer, from the consumer's perspective?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, if I can make sure I understand your question correctly, is you're asking if there's an agent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If that agent has authority from the owner to enter into that relationship, you know, with the landscaping business, then the owner basically has a contractual relationship with the landscaping business at that point.
Okay. Let's ask one more
question.
Yeah, please. In Section 6, there seems to be something else added here that I'm just trying to make sure I understand. It seems like before there was a sort of an open timeline upon which a person could make to file a claim for something, and it looks like in line 14 it says it has to be. We're adding in 1 year. Am I misunderstanding that?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, we've always had the stipulation that it be 1 year after the work is substantially completed.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I think. Go ahead, Janet.
Mr. Chair and Senator George, on page 7, lines 7 and 8, it's being taken from there.
Moved it from a different section.
Got you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that clarification.
Mr. Chair. Senator Starr.
Thank you. Is this anywhere similar to what happens on the construction contractor board side, that there's a certain percentage of the bond that's reserved for the homeowner? Do they have a similar arrangement?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, it mirrors it exactly. It's not a percentage, it's a certain amount. So it's $3,000 currently with this construction contractors board.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. I don't see anybody that represented the landscape contractors industry here. I'm assuming that you've run this through your advisory committees, councils, and whatnot. Otherwise, we'd have a room full of folks that weren't happy.
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, Oregon Landscape Contractors Association does not oppose the bill. They have suppliers in their membership, and so couldn't come out in strong favor of the bill because they knew that affected the suppliers in this case. But they told me directly that they do not oppose the bill.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know, but maybe the representative of them may have talked to some of you as they did me and said the same thing, did not oppose the bill, and they had their own reasons for maybe not wanting to just come today, but that's what I was told as well. Other questions? Janet, do you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, we had counsel come down just real quickly, and so I don't know what his response to that question about Section 7 was?
Chair Metzger, Administrator Atkins. on page 4, lines 32 through 35, your administrator is very much on top of these things, and I love working with
you. We know that.
The wording there, according to Legislative Council, Chuck Taylor, Legislative Council, is the statement is that it allows the board to enter into dispute resolution processes for anything as long as a person follows the rules of the board. So we're after, like, in enforcement cases, to be able to do mediation and also for there to help satisfy the consumer. So it's allowing us to go beyond just the claim process, but to enter into mediation for other cases that come when people file complaints or enforcement cases that come before the board. It's a very powerful dispute resolution process for us, and we would like to be able to use it whenever necessary to help resolve issues instead of fining people so much money.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Snyder?
Just for another quick one.
Yes.
Do you have any historical data about how many landscape contractors out there have had their bonds leaned against? I guess
Chair Metzger,
I'm looking kind of for the how big of a problem we
Senator Starr
trying to address.
We get about an average of 7 claims per month against licensed landscaping businesses. We only have around 1,200 landscaping businesses licensed in the state of Oregon, which is a very small number, really, when you think of the scope of things. We get an average of 7 claims a month. 95% of those are resolved in the mediation process that we statutorily perform. We do have probably, and if I could just refer, I do have my program analyst here, Kim Gladwell-Rowley. Maybe she would be able to answer that question.
Come forward.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Kim Gladwell-Rowley. I'm the program manager for the Landscape Contractors Board. And Mike's right, 95% of our claims are closed through mediation. There's maybe one or two a year that go on to the bond for the bond to pay.
That's very small. Okay, thank you.
And so, so what would be a typical case if you just said, oh, this is a typical case of one of those 7 a month?
She can answer that question very well.
Chair Metzger, Senator Deckert. One of those cases that would be typical would mostly be a landscaping business that is no longer in business. They've just let their license go. They've let their business go. They're not paying their suppliers. They're not taking care of homeowners. They really don't care if it goes to the bond. They don't realize the outcome of if it goes to the bond, if they've put up a personal guarantee.
So your mediation process helps bring that out and solve some of that.
Chair Metzger, yes. What we try to do is notify the landscaping business that there's been a claim filed and that they have a certain amount of time to respond to us. And if they are willing, if they respond to us and we send out a notice that we're going to have an on-site meeting where we meet with the consumer and the business owner, or the licensed landscape contractor in some cases, we work hard to resolve that issue so they don't have some long-lasting orders out there that would stop them from continuing business later on. Sometimes they don't realize. They think, just going to let it go to the bond and it'll be done. Well, if they let it go to the bond, they're not going to do business again until they pay that. And we do have they can, after there's, if the bond is paid off what they could, and they're still outstanding orders, they can have liens put against them. I mean, it's all kinds of things that can go wrong for them. So we try to mediate, and sometimes we can get the consumer to make concessions or make payment plans, whatever we can to make this happen so that they can continue business and make a living for themselves. Because it's a precious item to have their landscaping business license.
Other comments from this group? So, first of all, we have a couple of things here. We have what you have articulated as a very successful mediation process, but really hasn't been in statute. We've always said arbitration, and always prefer, you know, mediation into rather a forced arbitration. And then trying to mirror our statute more closely to the contractor statute in terms of how these funds would be distributed.
Correct.
Mr. Cross has come into the room. Would you like to testify, Mr. Cross? You don't have to, but we have talked about you in a roundabout way.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm here. My name is Bill Cross, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. And I'd like to be able to say that the association is concretely, you know, in support of these bills. When Mr. Snyder met with them to outline the concepts way back in the late spring, early summer, the board generally discussed them, but we didn't have the final language. We've got the final language. We just now haven't had a chance in the last couple of weeks to have a board meeting to approve or disapprove. But generally, they're supportive of Senate Bill 63, which their only concern when we didn't have the bill was how broad might the, you know, the language be. It's, as you may have seen, it's related to landscaping activities, the business of their landscaping activities, so we're satisfied that that's narrow enough and doesn't affect their other, you know, businesses that they may have out there that may have no relationship at all to landscaping. And the bond, we're supportive of the, you know, making sure that the owner has first sort of priority. Originally, we were a little concerned about the cap on what vendors or suppliers, and so we kind of stayed neutral because we have to work with those suppliers. Most of the suppliers, frankly, if you're a contractor in arrears, and arrears of payment for goods or services, they typically will go to civil court rather than through this process. So I don't know that it's a real big concern for our folks at this point in time, and they've kind of said, we're neutral. We won't take a position on it.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Cross? Any particular concerns at this point with the committee? Okay. Thank you. Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 62 and open a work session on Senate Bill 62.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 62 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 62 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any objection? Sword. Okay, Carrier. Okay. Senator Decker, if you're going to go, could you carry this bill whenever March comes around? Okay. So Senator Decker will be carrying Senate Bill 62. Open public hearing, Senate Bill 63, and we're back.
Chair Metzger and rest of the members of the committee, again, my name is Mike Snyder. I'm the current landscape contractor administrator. Senate Bill 63 is being proposed primarily because of the past history that the Construction Contractors Board unattractively, I guess, encountered with some of their contractors that were granted a license or maintained a license yet had outstanding debts and orders against them in courts of law and in other agency actions that were building homes and were still shown in through their debt through the CCB database that they were no claims or anything against them, yet they had these outstanding orders. Some of them had bankruptcy against them and they were outperforming construction work. And the Oregonian got a hold of that little bit of information and blasted it all over the world. And we saw that and realized that we also had some liability that was out there for us as people depend on the Landscape Contractors Board to be aware of what's going on with their licensees. And as long as the action is done within the Landscape Contractors Board jurisdiction, which is either an enforcement activity or a claim process, we have knowledge of those orders and those awards. However, if it goes into the court system or in another agency, they take action against the licensee. We have no real notice of that activity given to us. And we do not make it a practice to go search out all the public records on every licensed individual or licensed business in the state of Oregon to determine whether they have outstanding orders or landscaping debts before them. This bill would ask for the ability of the board to require all licensees for the cost of a postage stamp and a little bit of time to notify us if they have an outstanding order, arbitration award, any kind of adverse judgment that arises out of their performance of landscaping work. It's very limited. We're not after whether they have driving tickets or, you know, car wrecks or things like that, but it's arising out of landscaping work to notify the board of those awards and for the board then to follow through to see if they resolve those issues or are taking steps to resolve those issues or if we have to move into a suspension of license until they do resolve those issues. And to be able to notify the consumer that, yes, this business, this individual has some outstanding orders that need to be identified and looked at. So that's what this bill does.
Okay, my first question on this, Mr. Snyder, would be, we had a similar issue with airports last week, is that I don't see any penalty for in the language of this if someone doesn't. I mean, if you had someone who had judgments for not performing work, you know, where's the teeth to have that person say, by the way, I want to tell you I got judgments for not performing work. What is the penalty if they don't do that?
We have statutory authority in ORS 671-995, 955, is it? 997, to administer a $1,000 penalty for any violation of our statute. So that would be where it would start.
I see.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Molly Saxon.
I would think that many businesses would not report. It's sort of like with hospitals. We so want adverse infections, et cetera, to be reported, and it's very hard to get businesses to report when they've done something wrong and just hope and pray no one reports it. I'm not sure this will work.
Chair Metzger?
Do other states have programs like this that work?
Chair Metzger, Senator Monis Anderson, I'm unaware of what other states do in this. All we're trying to do is follow the CCB action. They're proposing similar language. We went to legislative council and said, you know, we think we need to have something like this, and left it up to them to write the language for us, gave them the concept. This is what it came out of that. We're trying to get a, you know, I don't think it's a big number of landscaping businesses, you know, that are affected by this. But we feel like it's necessary to at least have that out there so that we have some direction to go. I believe most landscaping businesses are ethical. You know, there's a few that aren't, of course. But, you know, by having this out there, if we do find out about it, then there is some problems.
No,
so
I don't follow up. I don't have a problem with the policy. I'm
right.
Just trying to wonder how you can really implement it.
And one thing, just as Mr. Snyder's alluded to, we will have the bills, and we're getting them now in the construction contractors, construction board task force, and that was one of the issues that Senator Monis Anderson, Senator Deckard and Starr, we heard last year, and we will be getting a bill similar from that task force to be able to track those individuals who you know, have outstanding judgments and then who go and get different names and perform the same work. So there's some ability to track that. We have another person to testify, but before I do that, is there any other questions at this moment for Mr. Snyder? Senator Starr.
What would it take your agency to do these background checks, dig this information out without the contractor provided it to you. Is there any means by which you could do? Is there any database maybe within the state? With, I mean, this says any state. So I mean, there's 49 other states. Is there any way for the agency to, one, get the information on its own, and two, to check? You know, you have folks coming in. I mean, Senator Mona Sanderson may be correct that folks aren't going to self-report. Is there a way to spot check to see what's really happening out there?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, I haven't looked into that, with definitive action. I know we have a system called Open Online, thing that we pay for a service to do criminal back checks, and things like that. But to find the public records that would allow us to know every judgment that was put against somebody through all the states, I don't know. I'm sure there's probably a service out there that we could subscribe to that would give us all that information. But I think it would be ominous for the agency every renewal period to do a search on every licensee before we renewed their license, to go through that check when there's very few that are going to be affected by this, that for the cost of the postage stamp they could notify us. Doesn't mean they're going to get their license taken away from them, but it'd be allow us to follow up with them and make sure that those things are being resolved. Please give us some direction at least to go to see if we could find the information on that person.
Any other questions right at the moment? Okay. If you just step aside for a moment, Mr. Snyder, we may bring you back. I'd okay. ask Roger Green to come forward. Or is that Greer? I'm sorry. Greer.
That's okay. It happens all the time. You'll have to excuse me. This is the first time I've testified in front of a committee like you guys, so if I'm nervous.
No problem.
Don't beat me too bad.
You'll be just fine. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
I'm Roger Greer from Greer Brothers Landscaping and Tree Service in Salem, Oregon. I am personally licensed landscape contractor. I also am personally licensed, or our company has a CCB license to perform other tasks. So we kind of been listening and interesting to both things that have been going on here. Our company has been in business since 1946. My father, our family is a family business. My father actually got and was on the board to get the original licensing for the landscape contractors in the early 70s. So I've been involved with that. I've been on the state boards years ago, so I've been around the industry myself 35 years. One of the things that concerns me a little bit about this, and to my knowledge, I have no, or our company has no, judgments or anything against us at this time in relates to the landscape industry here. So I'm speaking on hypotheticals and things like this. But to me, it just seems like this is just another government program that just for maybe a few that might come up. I did speak to Mr. Snyder a few minutes this morning, and he brought up one case that happened several months ago, and I've not heard it, and that was in the CCB. To me, it just seems like most of this stuff is public record anyway, and is the state adding on more stuff for us people in the private business to do when it really, I don't think, is necessary? And isn't that a part of their job on their boards and all to find all this stuff out rather than having the businesses do it for them? One thing that with the businesses that I'm personally involved in, three different businesses, two different states, with the certifications and licenses that I personally and my company has, we have over 14 of those in two states and one national. And two of the licenses require background checks, which we as a good, licensed, reputable business do not mind having that done to us. So it would seem to me like the boards should maybe do a little bit of their own work instead of having the private companies do it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Greer. Questions for Mr. Greer?
Okay.
Senator George.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Greer, I couldn't agree with you more. Actually, when I was reading this, I was having exactly the same thoughts in my head. I own a number of businesses, and if I had to proactively report things, and I don't know what needed to be reported, what didn't, I suppose if this was your only business and that's what you were focused on and you knew that this was a requirement, it'd be fairly easy. And I'd be very interested in maybe perhaps the board sitting down and figuring out some kind of background check system similar to what Senator Starr was talking about, because I think just putting a requirement out there that says that you as a business owner are supposed to know that you're supposed to report these things is a very difficult thing. In our litigious society today, people sue you all the time, just what happens. And I'm a little nervous about, just by omission, not because they're trying to hide anything, businesses being caught up in some kind of penalty stage. Would you be willing to sit down with the board and maybe perhaps hammer something like that out, especially with some experience in the other states?
Yes, I think I would.
Okay.
One question.
Senator
Starr. I'm interested in kind of the consumer of your services, their responsibility in doing a background check. It seems to me that if I'm going to buy, you know, landscaping services, there's a certain amount of responsibility that I have as a consumer, because I'm going to be writing a check to do my own research to know that the person I'm working with, you know, is a reputable company. You know, if you want to talk a little bit about your experience working with the public and providing them references and information about you as a company and allowing them the opportunity to self-determine that your company is a legitimate company that's somebody that they ought to do business with, rather than setting up a program that puts the onus on the industry without really much consideration of the consumer.
Well, Mr. Starr, thank you for asking that, because that was on my notes and I just didn't get there yet. I talked to one of my business partners this morning and another contractor that is a licensed landscape contractor, and we all agreed that where is the onus on the consumer doing their due diligence to make sure that the company that they do business with or a contractor that they hire is a reputable company that will do them a good job for a fair price. We've been in business, again, since 1946. Every time the state or a city that we want to work in says you got to have a license to do something, we want to do that. We get the license so we can operate like we're supposed to. Another thing that comes to my mind is, if we don't treat our customer right, then we aren't going to be in business very long. And we can't pay our bills and we can't pay the vendors that we work with. So there is a lot of our sales with our sales production, and just the fact that we're a reputable company and have been in the business in this area so many years, we don't have to do a lot of selling, but when people ask, yes, we give them references. I had a gentleman ask me the other day that I've known and done business with for several years, hey, could you show me two or three places that you've done with this kind of design in mind so I could go take a look at them and all that sort of thing. So that's something we're used to doing, is helping the consumer, give them education, and to help them make an informed choice whether to use us or somebody else.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, Mr. Greer, because I think you bring up some very valid points. And one of the things, and we're not going to move this bill today, one of the things that I think is important as we maintain the focus, and like I say, we'll see this with the construction task force, is that, and your business is a perfect example. You've been in business since the 40s. You've got a great reputation and can rely on that. And one of the issues that we're dealing with the CCB, and I think what they're trying to deal with is that person who's not reputable, okay, and they have ABC landscaping business, and he's competing against you, and ABC does all kinds of things wrong. So what they've done, you know, they just bag ABC and start JLK Landscaping. So then the consumer who, you know, who can do only so much due diligence, they don't know about Bill Jones, who was ABC. They call up the board, do you have any complaints against JLK? And there's no complaints against JLK. He gets the, you know, the bid over Mr. Greer. Turns out the individual involved was the one, and it gets rather difficult. Now, I think that some of the points that the committee brought up in terms of when you get one of these rare but, you know, certainly not good for the industry or for legitimate businesses like yours, you know, a scoundrel, to think the scoundrel is going to self-report, you know, probably is going to be more difficult. So I think we've got a couple of issues here to get to the same one. I know you, as a business owner, don't want other people in your business who are not treating customers right competing against you because they can make all kinds of contracts or representations if they don't intend to fulfill them correctly, as you would. So I agree with the committee that I'm not sure we get here. I do think we're probably on the same page that we want to protect the consumer, we want to protect legitimate businesses from people, but I'm not sure we're going to get there quite with this language. You know, what I would like to do on this, if it's okay with you, Mr. Greer, you're here from the area, you've been in the business a long time, you've told us about a very storied history with your father. You said you never testified for a committee before, so I'm going to show you a little bit about how this process works when people think that you come to the Capitol and it's all full of ivory towers and nobody, the average citizen has no impact. And as I tell people, you do have an impact if you choose to do so. I would ask if you would be willing to work with Mr. Snyder as someone who has a history in this this industry on, you know, how might we change Senate Bill 63 to make sure that the consumer is protected and that businesses like yours are protected from, you know, those occasional scoundrels without putting an undue burden on you or your other fellow landscape contractors that is unnecessary. And just see if there might be some ideas that might be produced from that, and also working with Mr. Cross in the back of the room who represents the entire industry. Would that be something you'd be willing to do?
Mr. Metzger, I was just going to say I don't want to step on the Landscape Board or the Landscape Contractor Association's toes, but yeah, I would
be willing. Well, you won't be doing that because I've asked you to do that in conjunction because you do have some expertise on it, and I think you brought some good points. So if you would do that, and as we're going to be journeying shortly, and Ms. Atkins can give you her contact number. Mr. Snyder, if you've been outreach, and Mr. Cross, because I think we want to get to the same place. We all have discomfort as whether this is doing it, and let's see what we can come up with this, and maybe change it so we have a workable solution without a burden to current businesses. Okay, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 63. And do you have a question, Janet?
No.
Okay. Every time I see you move quickly, I'm thinking I'm going to miss something. With that, we're adjourned.